If you're a smoker or vapor, ready to make a change, you really only need one good reason. But with Zyn nicotine pouches, you'll discover many good reasons. Zyn is America's number one nicotine pouch brand. Plus, Zyn offers a robust rewards program. There are lots of options when it comes to nicotine satisfaction, but there's only one Zyn. Check out Zyn.com/find to find Zyn at a store near you. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Welcome back to another episode of Trading Secrets. I'm your host, Jason Tardik, and in this intro, I have David Arduin with me, the Curious Canadian. He always does the recaps with me. We always go over the full episode at the end, gives his take. We're doing that this episode. We're also doing an intro. This episode is a great one. We have the winner of Survivor. He talks about when the money hits his bank account, all the moving parts of Survivor, questions like, hey, do you even get a toothbrush? You know, can you use toilet paper? All the ins and outs. But David, you and I talk about all that stuff in the recap. I want to give you the chance to come on the intro right here. Everyone listening, we ask that you follow us on YouTube, follow us on Instagram, give us 5 stars. But David, what do you got for the Money Mafia before we get into this episode?
Yeah, you hit him with some great teasers there. And some of those things that he dropped, a la the toothbrush and some other amenities that you may think they get on the show, think again. Look forward to breaking that down and maybe seeing what's in your bag of if I'm on a deserted island, I get to bring 5 things. I'm very curious if hair gel makes the list for you, Jay. But other than that, no, it was a great episode.
I love it. David, quick question for you. You're always on top of all things pop culture. What are you thinking right now? What's moving in the headlines? What are you watching on the TV set?
Well, you know, I'm watching Love Island Games. So I'm only 2 episodes into that, but you know, I'm happy it's back on my screen. Some familiar faces, some I like, some they're going to have a chance to get me on their good side, being on my TV the second time. Some familiar faces, it's good. It's always Love Island Games. It's light. It's an easy watch. What do you got?
Interesting fact, David. I was actually going to possibly go out to Fiji to film the after show with one of the episodes. And then they ended up making a last minute decision that they're not going to have any Bachelor alumni on. But they reached out. Like, you know, it wasn't like something we sought out. And I was very excited about doing that. I understand that decision. The decision also like tells me a little bit like, I'm sure they're only going with Love Island alumni, which makes sense. I also think it's cool to get different perspectives from different shows, but I don't know. You know, that's a bummer, but you can't win them all.
It's going to be good. And just like this episode. And I got to say, before we kick it to the actual interview with Kyle, and to me, it is the OG reality TV show. I remember watching it when I was like, you know, probably 10 years old, 11 years old, where you're really watching really like the average Joe on a TV screen trying to compete for millions of dollars. I can't personally remember the last time. I think I might need to fact check this before we get on the recap, but I think it was even before The Real World, MTV. Like that was also another classic old school reality TV show. I just hear when I hear 50 seasons, it blows my mind that it's still on our TV screen. And obviously it must still do well with ratings.
That's insane. But I too remember being in like middle school and in high school and watching it. So that's good stuff. We'll get into this episode. Before we do, let's do a couple personal updates, David. I am getting excited this week. I'll be heading to New York.
Yeah.
The new place is locked in. I'm going to Ryder Cup. They sold over 50,000 tickets. Next recap, we'll do some breakdowns of where pop culture meets money. I think last episode was absolutely incredible with Bobby Bones talking about how much he made in American Idol, Dancing with the Stars, all the moving parts, and also had my parents here this past weekend, which was just awesome. So it's been a good week. I feel like my tank is fully charged. I'm excited to be in New York this weekend. What do you got going?
Yeah, I'm jealous of you going to the Ryder Cup. You know, I'm in full hockey swing. Season's underway. 3 weekends in a row. Traveling for my first weekend up to Boston this weekend. So I'm doing that. You know, I'm trying to be the man around the house while I got the wife in the third trimester and trying to take care of business here. And never a dull moment in the Arduin household. Let's just say never a dull moment, but always good to be on here catching up with you and getting a recap another great episode.
I love it. Going into the trimester, you are an absolute stud doing your thing. And when I think about trimester and having a baby, we got to give a shout out to John and Alex. Congratulations on their baby girl, Lucy Gray. I'm so excited for them. But you know what, David? this intro, it's time. It's time to get into Survivor, the trading secrets of a reality show we have never talked about on this entire podcast with Kyle. Let's ring in the bell.
Welcome back to another episode of Trading Secrets. Today, we are joined by Survivor Season 48 champion, Kyle Frazier. After 26 days of outwitting, outplaying, and outlasting in one of the most grueling reality competition shows out there in television history, Kyle walked away with the $1 million prize and the title of Sole Survivor. Known for his strategic gameplay, clutch immunity wins, and ability to build trust in even the most cutthroat situations, Kyle's season has been called one of the most exciting in recent memories. Today, we are going to unpack the strategy, the mindset, and my favorite, the behind-the-scene moments that ultimately led to his victory and what life has been like since leaving the island. I'll tell you what, Kyle, a lot of action. You were a teacher, now attorney, now a Survivor winner, and you won $1 million. Thank you so much for being on Trading Secrets.
Dude, thank you, man. That was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate it. There's so many things that I got with this. Like, I don't even need my notes here, but I'll look at them. Why not? Because I'm so interested in the behind the scenes of Survivor, you know, how production plays, if they do play, what kind of food you get, all that. But we're a money podcast, so we got to come out swinging right from the get-go.
Let's do it.
I saw an awesome video. If you guys are here, go follow Kyle on Instagram. It's his video where you are surprising your wife about the fact that you won $1 million. And you're telling her, like, I won it. I told you I would make this happen. I told you we would find wealth. And it's like the most beautiful thing in the world. You're telling me in that video, she truly had no idea?
I swear to God, hand to God. So that was in my brother's basement in LA. So when you fly back from Fiji, you come back to LA and then everybody has a connector, you know, go home. My brother actually, like, I think 5-6 days before I went out for Survivor, had his second kid. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't got a chance to meet him yet because I had to fly to LA and then go to Fiji, whatever. So I come back and I was like, I'll stay in LA for a couple of days. So I'm in his basement, got to meet the kid after, like, you know, 26 days of the jungle, like holding new life in your hand. But long story short, my wife, Maggie, then fiance, she had flown into LA and came to my brother's place, and I didn't tell anybody before I saw her.
Yeah.
Came downstairs. I don't know what possessed me to put the phone up, but I put it in the little corner. It's a little blurry. And I wanted to make her guess at it.
Yeah.
And she hates guessing at things. So she was like, can you please just tell me? And I was like, screw it. Like, I won $1 million.
I mean, unbelievable. What a surprise it must have been for her. Let me ask you this. You know, it's a 26-day Survivor Challenge, as everyone knows. You're out there for a long period of time. You win $1 million. Do they pay you immediately? Do you have to wait a certain period of time? Like, no. Do you have your $1 million yet?
I got my million. That money hits your bank account the day that the finale ends.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, May 21st, I want to say, was our finale. I opened up my bank account after watching the episode with all the production people and all my castmates and friends and family are there. And there's just, like, I have a Charles Schwab bank account. Yeah, it has, like, a little graph in there.
Yeah.
And it just went from, like, this to just shooting off the screen. Next thing you know, I get, like, emails like, Mr. Frazier, we're so glad you're banking with us. I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
Like, that, I mean, we talked money in this podcast. That had to be, like, 10x what was in your bank account.
For,
like,
sure. For sure.
Yeah.
Embarrassed what was in it before.
Yeah. Like, well, you're a hardworking individual, and we'll talk a little bit about your professional life. Before we do that, though, in this video, everyone's a critic. Everyone's got a comment about something. And you said in the video, we're now millionaires. And then, of course, all the comments were like, well, after taxes, you're not a millionaire. $400,000. So I want to ask you, when they give you that amount, do they take the taxes out for you, or do you have to plan for that yourself now?
No, it's pre-tax. So I had to plan for it myself. So it's just $1 million. You get $1 million.
I don't know why. I'm like, that's awesome. Yeah,
it's actually really interesting. I won't bring it up. But yeah, it's pre-tax, $1 million. And then you have to plan for that yourself. So I actually, you know, have been working on that the past couple months, you know, different investments, high yield savings account, yada, yada, yada. But I think between, you know, federal tax and New York State and New York City, it comes out to like $359 that you get in taken tax, out. Yeah. But you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
I actually earned the money. When I went on Survivor, I was living in Columbus, Ohio. So I was kind of wondering, like, can I pay the Ohio taxes? But I'm not going to screw around. I'm just going to do what I got to do, you know?
That's smart right there. All right. Yeah. So the $1 million, it kind of reminds me, like, the way you were envisioning it of, like, going into Charles Schwab and seeing that money go up, it's reminded me of Squid Games. Like, obviously a different concept.
Yeah.
But when he looks at the bank account, there's all this money in there. One of the biggest questions, the money mafia, that's who listens to the show, was asking is, what do you do now? Like, where you got to splurge on something. You got to buy something that's maybe an outlying thing. Where and how are you going to treat yourself?
So it's funny. So, you know, I know you're not supposed to do this money mafia, but I was planning in advance. So maybe I used a little bit of the money beforehand. My wife and I got married September 14th, which was about a month and a half after I got back. And probably one of the largest purchases I ever made. I bought us Taylor Swift tickets.
Nice.
So we went to Toronto, I want to say a month or two after our weddings, and the end of the Eras tour. I think it was like the second to last concert. So that was a splurge.
How much were those tickets?
I want to say all in all, this was like an $8,000 to $9,000 endeavor.
Oh, you had like front row seats.
We were in there. But going to Toronto, doing a couple different things. I remember it being like, okay, like we're going all in on this.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was every penny was worth it. Like she's a massive Taylor Swift fan. You know, I obviously respect the music and we had a great time, but
I love
was a splurge.
It. Good.
And I'm going to throw a party. I've always said if I ever like hit gold, I would throw a massive party. So I'm working on that too.
Okay. Good stuff. You're going to do it. It's going to happen. $1 million is now in your bank account. If for other people that are playing the show, like, are you at all paid to be on the show at all? Is there any other type of financial compensation that maybe we wouldn't know behind the scenes or anything like that?
So I think it's pretty common knowledge that second place gets $100,000.
Yeah.
And then I think it's sort of goes from there. There's certainly not, I mean, I can't get into production stuff too much, but there's certainly not like any sort of appearance fee or anything like that.
Gotcha.
But like, you know, there's prize money for each place.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think that's pretty settled. Everybody knows about the million. Everybody knows about second place. And then from there, it kind of moves accordingly.
Okay. Gotcha. One thing that people, if they saw the show, they know. If they didn't see the show, they might not know. Michigan grad, you were a teacher. From being a teacher, you went back to school. You are now, you define it as a white collar criminal defense attorney.
Yep.
White collar. Did I nail that?
Attorney. Okay. That's so that's correct.
A big career pivot for you. After you won the $1 million, was there any part of you that said, like, I'm going to take some time off work?
Yeah, you know, so it's funny. When I went on Survivor, I was actually working for that judge in Columbus, Ohio. Mm-hmm. So it's called a clerkship, where you get a year off of your normal job and you go and work for a judge. If you're a litigator like me, you help them decide cases, you know, advise on different issues that come up in their cases, travel with them. It's a really awesome gig. You sort of learn how the sausage is made behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And then you come back and you become a better litigator. So I came back from Survivor. I was ending that clerkship with the judge, who was incredible for even letting me go on the show. Mm-hmm. And then I came back to my firm in New York. So since winning Survivor, I've now come back. But the funny thing is, it hadn't aired yet. So I'm like working my job at this, you know, white collar litigation boutique that I love. And everyone's like, oh yeah, you're on a reality TV show. Like, and so they're slowly realizing that I have a shot at this thing, which was a really cool process to watch. But to answer your question, I think I'm always going to want to be a lawyer. Like, I have other interests. I like to write. I've always wanted to teach. Again, I used to teach, but I just love being a lawyer. I love sort of problem solving. I think that was shown on the show a lot. And I think that those skills definitely helped me a ton, but I'll always be a lawyer in some shape or fashion.
You talked about the fact that your superpower is your charm and that you're a people person. You also talked about that fact you're a little impulsive, but one of the things you probably had to keep close to your chest is the fact you are a litigator, because litigators are quick. You are sharp. You know how to do your research and your due diligence, and then you know how to execute with your delivery. Is that something that you kind of kept close to the chest intentionally while playing the game?
Yeah, I actually told people that I was a teacher. So the way that I sort of looked at my strategy, like, I really wanted to come across as non-threatening as possible.
Mm,
so I rewinded my life about 3-4 years. And I said that I was teaching. I used to teach at a boarding school. So that's exactly what I said I did. I said I met my wife there instead of law school. And it's really funny, because on Survivor, it's a trope. When you're a lawyer, you don't tell people that you're a lawyer. Very rarely do people ever say it, because for whatever reason, people think lawyers are like skeevy, or they're trying to get one off of them. And listen, those lawyers exist. I certainly think it's hilarious, because we have to follow like the bar and rules, ethical rules. And it's funny though, I think that while my like legal problem solving skills definitely helped me, mm-hmm. I want to say my teaching skills really kind of got the job done because I really played a people-oriented game. And just teaching and being in the classroom and knowing what each and every kid needs and sort of tailoring your lesson plan to that, it was huge for me because I really feel like I was able to develop relationships with tons of different people on that island. But the legal skills and the persuasion, that obviously came in a ton.
That makes sense. We're going to get into some of the details of Survivor. That is coming soon. But I am curious, as far as litigation, what is one thing when it comes to litigation, you know, us back home and me personally just talking to you right now, what is one thing we might not know? Give me a trading secret behind litigation. Maybe it's a tip, maybe it's a trick, a strategy that you deploy, but like what's something in that world we wouldn't know otherwise asking you?
Yeah, I mean, I hope this doesn't come across as far-fetched, but it's just the creativity. When I went to law school, I was, am I selling my soul? Am I sort of giving up this side of myself that mm-hmm. like to just follow this rule-oriented profession? Mm-hmm. But being a litigator means being creative. You find all these cases and precedent that allow you to like argue your case to the best of your ability. And a lot of times you feel as if you're pigeonholed by that precedent. But there's so many different ways to interpret a case. There's so many different ways to utilize precedent and interpret it in new ways that can make for very compelling arguments. And I feel as if, especially working as a clerk and seeing so many cases from that side as a neutral arbitrator, I feel as if the best litigators are one who are creative, who take chances, who like try new arguments instead of playing exactly by the book every single go. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like you really have to think outside of the box. And I think some of the coolest issues I've ever worked on are ones where I've had a chance to really think about the law in a creative, different way.
Interesting. We've had Savannah Chrisley on the podcast. She talked a lot about her parents who were sentenced to 12 and 8 years for what's considered white collar crime, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And they were pardoned by the president. But one of their biggest arguments in that case was that they weren't aware of what was being done by their accountant or their attorney. And this is more of a blanket question, but when you're litigating in white collar crime and you are in a defense position, do you find that majority of these people aren't aware of what's actually happening? Or is it more often than not, they know what had happened and then you have to work around that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it depends on the case, but there are, I mean, intent is plays such a big role in these criminal cases and even civil prosecutions and things of that nature. There's so many times you see where somebody knows that they're doing something wrong, but they don't know exactly what they're doing wrong. So when they get hit with the book, it's so different than what they expected. There are people who genuinely are going about their business and they don't know that they were doing something wrong because a lot of these regulations and laws are written in confusing manners. They're spider webs. Sometimes even think about it, if you get charged with some obscure criminal case and you know, it takes me as your lawyer some time to figure out exactly what's going on and why you were prosecuted with this. Mm-hmm. I think about the person who's going about their everyday business. You know, that said, I think there are some times where people know they're doing something wrong and it's just, you know, point blank, cut and dry. But I see so many cases, and I think everyone in this profession would say they see so many cases where people don't know what they were doing or didn't even intend to do the exact wrong thing that they were doing.
Okay. Have you ever been, people talk about white collar criminals that go to jail and they talk a little bit about, it's like a little bit of a fluffy jail, right? It's like, it's cushy in there. Have you ever actually been to a prison that is for white collar criminals? And if you have, like, what does that look like compared to like a state prison?
Yeah, no. So it's so interesting. I mean, I think that that's sort of a trope.
Okay.
A lot of times when people get charged with crimes, they go to the same jails and prisons that other people go to.
Okay.
It's funny. You're talking to the right guy. I don't know if this came up at all, but I actually have history with incarceration.
I did see that.
Yeah. So, you know, I've been incarcerated 3 different times. You know, nonviolent misdemeanor offenses off my record, et cetera, et cetera. But it's so interesting. I mean, yeah, people are put in the same, it's all the same box for the most part. You know, there might be instances where somebody needs to be put in protective custody. They're well known. They might need a little bit more of a different population. Age is like obviously a factor in a lot of ways, but a lot of times it is the same place that everyone goes.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. So that is a little bit of a trope. That's fascinating stuff. I know you talked about it on the show and you had mentioned it here. Have you at all specifically disclosed what you were arrested for or no?
Yeah. You know, I had a drunken disorderly charge that, you know, I think that was in large part in relation to, you know, not to get into hot button topics, but racial profiling, you know, underage possession of alcohol is something I had two of those. And I think that a lot of those were just in relation to me being very young.
Yeah.
I grew up in sort of a small town area where individuals, you know, you start drinking at a very young age, you know, drinking amongst other things for other people in my community. But I had a lot of contact with the criminal legal system growing up. I'd say, like, you know, of course, I take accountability for anything that happens in my life.
Sure.
But a lot of that dealt with just me looking different than the people that were around me, too. You know, I played lacrosse in college, was there on a scholarship. I went to a private school and in high school on scholarship as well. But I grew up in sort of an urban Black community, rural white community, and then went to school amongst, you know, affluent white individuals.
Mm-hmm.
So I've kind of always viewed myself in many different spaces that have always sort of allowed me to navigate in different ways.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely an interesting background, especially being a lawyer and where I'm at today. And it's really cool to sort of be where I'm at, I guess.
Yeah, and it's such important messaging to use platforms, whether it's Survivor, podcasts, wherever, to continue to speak about that and your experiences and everything you've learned from that. So I think that's awesome. And look where you are today.
Yes, sir.
Now you're an attorney. I love it.
Love the night? Reach for Zen After Dark, a limited cocktail-inspired series for those who get up when the sun goes down. Try Zen's Mojito, Spiced Cider, and espresso martini nicotine pouches. Find them at select retailers. Available while supplies last. Zen After Dark. Bring on the night. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
Now talk to me before we move into Survivor. We talk money here. From a teacher perspective, going into law work, what's the difference in pay?
Dude, so when I started teaching in 2016, I was teaching at an all-boys boarding school in North Carolina. I want to say that the pay there was $28,000.
Wow.
I think maybe the second year I was there, I think I got up to like 31. The catch there was I was in the boarding school. So I lived on campus, got free housing, three meals a day. I was coaching football and lacrosse. So that was what that was.
But that's a tight budget.
Yeah.
You're living off $28,000, $31,000. That's tight.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I have obligations to my family too. You know, my brother and I have always, our parents took care of us, and we've always made sure to take care of them, even back then.
Yeah.
Went to law school, took on more debt, and wasn't making any money then. And then I got out, and I think at the time, going into big law, I worked at a big law firm before I moved to my boutique. I did labor and employment litigation. I want to say the base salary for a first year was $190.
Wow.
And then I think in the middle of my first year, it bumped up to 205, which, I mean, literally, I mean, I think it, what is that, quadrupled, you know, quintupled, whatever the word is, my salary.
Yeah.
So it was insane,
six, man. Seven times. That's that's unbelievable. Just so you do your 3 years at a great school, right? So Michigan, go blue. And then you get hired. Is there bonus potential when you work as an attorney at like a big firm like that?
Yeah, there's always a bonus. You know, the pay is lockstep for these firms. So there's, you know, how many AM 100 firms, even more so. And especially in the markets like New York, Chicago, LA, they're all the same. They're all lockstep. So everyone—
What is that for someone that doesn't understand that, like me? What does lockstep mean?
Yeah, it means that everybody's getting paid the exact same thing across the profession in that specific role.
So like first year law students in that firm, no matter where you are, you're making $190.
$190.
Got it.
Yep. And then when one firm moves up to 205 in the middle of the year because they want to come across as better than all the other firms,
sure,
the other firms all move up to 205.
Interesting.
So you know what you're getting paid. You know, bonuses for the most part are very similar to that. There are a couple firms that, you know, have black box earning potential and don't necessarily tell people what their bonuses are going to be. But for the most part, those bonuses across all of those firms are lockstep too.
Interesting. Okay. So bonuses too. All right. That's a huge step up from teaching. Now you're making a couple hundred grand. And then like once you get, and I'm going to go to Survivor, my Survivor fans, I'm going in just 1 second. But when you continue to work up the ladder in a big firm like that, two questions I have for you. Is what is like earning potential look like, just high level? And then also, how many hours a week are you working when you start off?
So when I started off, I mean, I was working a lot of hours. It's a demanding job.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
like
really
60, 70?
60, 70, sometimes 80.
Wow. That'll get you ready for Survivor.
Yeah. And it's different, right? It's different because there's the corporate roles. I'm a litigator, right?
Yep.
So my schedule's a little bit more structured.
Yep.
I sort of know what's coming down the pipeline. But when you're a young associate, you know, you're at the whims of everybody at the firm.
Yeah.
You know, you're working amongst senior associates, you're working for partners, and then you're working for the client at the top, right? And so, yeah, you know, something could pop up. You're doing the groundwork, you're doing the grunt work. So you're working 70, 80 hour weeks a lot of times. And the difference for me, especially with my friends who aren't in that environment, they don't know that, you know, my phone is on all the time. It's not a 9 to 5, you're answering emails anytime they come in.
24.
You miss something at 10:30, you could get in trouble for that.
Wow.
Now, that's not always the case. People are reasonable, but it's possible. And so you're working really hard.
Interesting. All right. Well, we're going to transition into Survivor. It's so cool to learn about other industries. You decided to go on the show, 26 days off. Was there any risk that you might have lost your job when you made this decision?
So when I was clerking for an awesome judge. And, you know, at first I was really scared to bring it up to him, especially because clerkships, it's a 1-year position. There's only 3 people. They're, you know, not trying to brag, but they're really prestigious. And
sure.
I was a federal appellate clerkship. I was working on the Sixth Circuit, and it's great experience. So the deal that I made with my judge, he actually almost had somebody go on the Bachelorette one clerk. So
there was some
precedent for this.
No way.
But the deal that I made with him, because Survivor was going to be at the last month and a half of my clerkship, with appellate cases, you get the entire record. So like, you know, it's already gone to trial. The lawyers have already done their thing there. And now I, as a clerk, get to see the entire record and then make a decision with my judge. Of course, the judge makes a decision, but you get it in advance, about a month and a half, 2 months in advance. So I made a deal with my judge for about a month and a half. I just grinded and got all of my cases done in advance so that by the time that sitting would come around, I would be in Survivor, but the cases would have already, in theory, you know, we've already gone through the process. He would have decided them already. So It was weird. It was a grind because, you know, clerkships are typically viewed more as that 9 to 5, but we sort of turned it into this like high pressure thing where I needed to get all this work done. I didn't want to let down my co-clerks, my co-workers,
sure. Yeah.
And didn't want to let down the judge first and foremost and like do my civic duty because I'm a government employee. So it really worked out because I don't know if in another job it would have necessarily gone that way.
I hope that judge looks back today and says, wow, thank God I let him go.
Oh, he's pumped up. I think he threw a Survivor birthday party.
Hell yeah. I love it. I love it. All right. Well, let's go back to where we started. And where we started was the video of you telling your wife you won $1 million. In that video, you also mentioned, I am chiseled, because she's saying you lost some weight. So you're there for 26 days. How much weight did you lose?
Yeah, I lost 28 pounds. I want to say when I went into Survivor, I bulked up just a little bit. I put on a little, you know.
Intentionally, right?
Yes.
Knowing that you're going to lose weight.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So I bulked up. I put on some fat. I like got as strong as I could be, trained for strength. And then I put on extra fat about 2 weeks before I went out there. I want to say I was at 193. And then I know for certain that I was down 28 pounds at the end of the game. And I was just a skeleton.
Wow.
There's a picture of me holding my newborn nephew who I'd mentioned. And I just look gaunt. And so when Maggie saw me, she like almost started crying just because like how skinny I was.
How hard is that? I mean, we know that there's the struggle for food. On this season, you guys essentially are given no food at all. That's like a reality. Like there's not even like a producer here and there throws you an orange or vitamin, nothing like that. Like you actually have no access to food at all.
No, man, no access to food. You have to go get it yourself. You know, I caught a fish.
Yep,
you win fishing gear, caught a fish. We dug in the ground for different roots and, you know, starches and things like that we were able to find because we had a survivalist on my initial tribe. Coconuts are a huge source of, you know, calories. I mean, the amount of calories that you can get in them is minuscule, but you sort of use them to hydrate and stuff like that. But yeah, no food unless you earn it.
Was there any time that you felt like you were going to like literally pass out from?
Oh, all the time. I mean, that's the thing about starvation that I just wasn't aware of. And like, I use this term starvation loosely because at some points in the game, I did earn food. But when you're at your limit with food, every single time you try to get up, you feel like you're going to pass out.
Mm.
It's actually insane. I've never really dealt with anything like that. You know, sometimes my wife will be like, oh, I feel a little like I might just like, you know, pass out. I stood up too fast. I've never felt that before until then, where at the point you're making strategic decisions every time you sit down because you know how much energy it's going to take for you to get back up.
That's
pretty crazy.
Unbelievable. At any point during the game, and I know it's very frowned upon in the community, but like, is there any point that you're like, I might tap out?
Dude,
and did any of your peers feel that way?
I did not. I absolutely, you know, I'm not even trying to sound like a tough guy because all that stuff sucks physically, But at the same time, it's just the time of your life. Mm-hmm. I'm getting to know, I mean, I went on Survivor because I wanted to get to know, I love being a lawyer, but I felt as if it's a very insular community sometimes. My wife is a lawyer. All of our closest friends are lawyers for the most part. That's what my life is here. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to sort of get out, meet new people, learn new things, because I just love, like I said, you know, when we're talking about other things, I like to be a part of different communities and just not feel pigeonholed. Hmm. And so I was having the time of my life out there. What do you mean? I get to hang out with a blue collar firefighter who's a single mom from Chicago. And like, I get to learn from her. I get to learn from a woman who, you know, talks about her autism openly, but plays ice hockey. Like all of those conversations, all of those moments. And then I get to go compete on the show that I fucking love.
Yeah.
It was an incredible experience, an incredible, incredible experience. And I, you know, sometimes you just embrace the suck.
Yes. Yeah. That's, I like that line.
Sorry, I get pumped
just
up.
Just embrace the suck. I know you get fired up thinking about it. When you think about all these different personalities, different stories and backgrounds, I'm always curious, and I ask this pretty much on anybody that comes on this show from any reality show. Is there anything peculiar about the casting process that you look back on? You're like, huh, that was a weird question. Or I had to do a 1,000 question survey with a psychologist. Is there anything peculiar through the casting process?
Yeah, I just think it's the process in general. Like I watched your episode with Amanda.
Yeah.
And my wife and I were huge fans of Summer House.
Yeah.
And I remember you mentioned that, you know, like you didn't think you were a reality TV guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that was definitely my experience. I always talk about it's a miracle that I got cast on the show. I guess I have, you know, some pretty interesting things about my background.
Yeah.
But I'm just not that guy. And like, I think that was a large part of the criticism of me that season was like, this guy's not the best TV sometimes. So all that to say, in casting, and I'm interested if you ever dealt with this, but you feel like you're kind of ratcheting up your personality 30%.
100%.
And it feels inauthentic at first, but you get used to it. But you also have to talk about yourself all the time. And that's just not my MO. I guess now it kind of is, but like you have to talk about yourself all the time, ratchet up your personality and sell the most TV-oriented things about yourself. And that was really weird for me.
Yeah.
And it still is really weird for me, but that I hope that sort of answers your question.
Well, it's so funny you said that, because a friend of mine is getting casted for a show, and this friend was asking me, you know, what are your thoughts and what should I do and what are some things I should think about? I said, we're going to take your personality and your 4 out of 5 when you and I are just sitting there. I said, literally verbatim, I go, we're going to dial it into like an 8 or 9.
Yep.
We're going to be extra animated, a little bit more vocal, and we're going to tell our stories with a lot more emotion. And it's just the reality of like, if you want to get picked for these shows, you have to give them a show, because all they care about at the end of the day is storytelling and ratings. That's what it is, right?
Exactly.
So that's what it's all about. Let's go into this. You got 18 people there. You know, your likelihood of winning going into that's roughly around 6% or so. Day one, you're looking around. Are you thinking, pun intended, just survive, make the next cut, get to the top 10? Or do you really in your mind believe you are going to win this thing?
Up until the point that we got to the island, when the game started, I've always thought that I've had an awesome shot at winning. Mm. Now, the people around me, I don't, like in Survivor, people who are conventionally athletic or people who are seen to be social butterflies and stuff, they get to a certain part of the game, the merge, but then they usually get cut. Mm-hmm. And so everybody around me was terrified that I'd probably get cut right around the middle of the game. I, you know, the ego that takes to go on to reality TV, I was like, I know I can do this. I know I can play this game. Just be myself, talk to people, like get to know them and like let them get to know you. That said, the moment we hit that beach and I was ready to go into that first challenge, I was the most nervous I've ever been in my life. I am not that much of a nervous person. You know, I argued a trial in law school on behalf of, you know, a kid facing felony allegations. Giving that opening was the best moment of my life. I was having so much fun. I don't get chills that much. I was terrified going out on that beach. And my first day is historically one of, I think, the worst starts for a winner, certainly. You know, I had like a tough go at it in the first challenge, something that I should have been able to do easily. Then I lost to a guy in a one-on-one challenge who had just dislocated his arm, and I broke my challenge. So that first day humbled me. So I broke my jug that like ended the challenge, essentially disqualified myself. That essentially like put me down to planet Earth, and I was terrified I was going to be voted out first, which, you know, fortunately I wasn't. I won the game, but it was definitely tough.
What do you think? If you had to attribute one thing to your success in the game, making it all the way to differentiate yourself, what do you think that game plan was? What was the big differentiator?
Yeah, you know, it sounds redundant, but I said my motto going in there was people first.
Yeah.
A lot of people think that Survivor is this strategy game, and it is. There's so much intricacy to it, but you cannot, it's not chess. Mm-hmm. You have to get to know people first before you can freaking play the game. So that, but I think just listening and kind of just listening instead of talking and just knowing, I mean, I was hyper aware of what's going on. I think that, like, not to go on a tangent here, but the way I grew up, I was constantly navigating between sort of black environments and white environments. And I sort of developed this skill that can sometimes be harmful where I'm hyper aware of things. Mm. How am I coming across? How do these people perceive me? Am I being the person that I need to be right now? And I think that that sort of sensitivity that I've had my entire life suited me perfectly for Survivor.
So interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the decisions you made towards the end, which I thought was really interesting, is you took Joe to the final three. Was that decision based on loyalty or calculation to win?
It was both.
Okay.
It was both. Joe and I had talked about that. I knew that I had a very strong chance of winning. At the same time, I wanted to take Joe to the end. I knew that I could beat the person who people told me that I couldn't beat. I knew I could do it if they just knew my game, if I had a chance to explain it. I think that's the conundrum that a lot of people get into Survivor. You'll see these people play these games, but then they don't necessarily have the chance to explain it fully, or they don't get the tool. They don't have the tools to explain it fully at the end of the game. I knew, like, speaking is my bread and butter.
Yeah.
So I knew that I could pull that off.
Interesting. So we talked about a little bit of starvation. What about sleep deprivation? How hard is it to sleep in those circumstances, and how big of an impact did that have?
Oh, it's pretty tough. It's pretty tough. I think that on top of just the conditions, just being away from, you know, a lot of people go to sleep next to their loved ones. Some people go to sleep in the most comfortable place, you know, that you have none of that. You're with just straight strangers in the jungle, which is obviously pretty difficult. Very difficult to sleep, though. I do okay without that much sleep. I'm early morning, early riser, which I think is another reason that did me well in the game. But it was really tough. Some people had a much harder time than I did, I would say, you know, and we had some issues over snoring and stuff like that. That was pretty funny.
How many, if you had to guess how many hours on average you slept a night, what do you think?
Oh man, I would say 3.5, 4.
Yeah.
And it's interrupted 3.5, 4 because I was waking up at least every 45 minutes. You're lucky if you get like an hour and a half straight. And when you wake up, you're thinking about the game. Is somebody else talking behind my back? Am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing? I'm just running through all the conversations I had that day. And then you calm your mind down, you go back to sleep. But it's tough. It's tough out there.
Obviously, you won. So, you know, you're the champion. But looking back at your time playing the game, what's one move you would have made differently?
So, winning rewards. So, like I said, there's no food. So, as you get later into the game, you have chances to win rewards. Yep. And if I were to write a book on Survivor and things not to do, I would say don't win reward. Because when everyone else in front of you is starving and you have the power to literally, in my instance, feed them fried chicken and waffles, go have beers on a boat, go like stand on, you know, this awesome island elsewhere, I literally pissed off everyone else on that island. I upset some of the people that I did take on the reward. It was still an awesome time. But I think that's the one moment, if I ever thought that I might be in danger, that was the one moment that I thought might affect my game.
If you're a smoker or vapor ready to make a change, you really only need one good reason. But with Zyn nicotine pouches, you'll discover many good reasons. Zyn is America's number one nicotine pouch brand. Plus, Zyn offers a robust rewards program. There are lots of options when it comes to nicotine satisfaction, but there's only one Zyn. Check out Zyn.com/find to find Zyn at a store near you. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
All right, we always talk about breaking points on the show. What was your lowest point emotionally, mentally? What day was it? What happened? And walk me through that, because there had to be high points and there had to be at least one low point.
You know, there was a scene towards the end of the game. It was actually the day before the finale. And I had won the final immunity challenge. And I ended up taking Joe to the end And my number one ally, Camilla, who was obviously big competition for me. I think everybody at that point was big competition. But Camilla had been with me the entire game. Mm-hmm. And making that decision, not only did I put Camilla, my number one ally, who I'd been with the entire game, into fire. So that was a very difficult emotionally decision. Eva and I have an extremely close relationship. She's like a little sister to me. We were very tight out there. We talked for hours every single day. She's my best friend, she's best friend of mine. And, you know, putting her into fire and seeing what she had to go through in that moment was incredibly difficult for me. They showed a little bit of it on the show, but she had an episode and she got through it. And the moment that I picked her to take fire, I wanted to take it back because I knew how much pain it had put her in.
Yeah.
But she refused to let me take it back. And she refused to let anybody else take it from her. And she went in and she did this challenge herself. And it was impeccable. It was incredible. Both of those women, Eva and Camilla. But I felt like I had wronged two people that I was incredibly close with when I had to make that decision. And, you know, it got better, but that was a really tough decision to make.
You had a secret alliance with Camilla for people that did not watch the show. But one thing I'm curious is you're constantly playing the game, and the game also connects to lying and sometimes backstabbing. So what did you learn about trying to read people as they're lying or potentially backstabbing? Did they have tells? Was there certain information you started to pick up on? How did you start to see when people are trying to manipulate you, lie to you, or even backstab you?
Yeah, I think this is what makes Survivor an amazing game.
Yeah.
Because, of course, some people have tells.
Uh-huh.
But what I learned about reading people is that you're foolish if you actually think that you can read people.
Mm.
Now, I'm a defense attorney. Like, you know, you hear all these cops say they can read people or that they're better investigating or not. But then a lot of these people get things wrong.
Yeah.
But on the island, especially when you're starving and when you're struggling, you know, everybody's telling some sort of lie. Everybody's telling something. So what I learned to lean on was, of course, I'm going to try and read people in the moment. But part of what made my game great, I think, is that I had the social capital to talk to everyone. Mm-hmm. I knew what was going on for the most part with everyone. Instead of trying to read people in their tells, what's the information you're giving me? What is the information this person and this person's giving me? I'm going to cross-check it just like I do as a lawyer. I'm going to look at all the documents in front of me, and then I'm going to come to a decision on my own.
Mm.
I think there's a lot of people who are out there and they say like, oh, I can catch people. You know, my first job was at a bar. Bartenders, you know, I was a bar back when I was 16, and they always used to say like, look to the left. People look to the left when they're lying. I just don't think it's true. I think that you have to use your investigative skills and actually get facts and information and then use it. And I think that's what makes good Survivor players.
Okay. Speaking of good Survivor players, we are going to ask you a little bit about who you would hire and fire. So if you could think about all the Survivor cast out there, okay? You could either, we'll let you do it your season, or it could be any Survivor alumni. We're going to start with the easy one. You can hire one person when you start your next business venture, whatever it might be. Who from the Survivor franchise or from season 48 would you hire, knowing you get one hire?
I think I would hire... I'm going to hire the season 47 winner,
okay,
Rachel Lamont.
Okay,
Rachel Lamont. She just came out with this incredible speed-based puzzle game.
Okay.
She's a graphic designer, and I think that everything that like she does is just really kind of eloquent.
Okay.
And she's already got the graphic designer skills. I feel like I'm somebody who I have a lot of ideas, but I need people who can actually bring them to life and make them look good. So I feel like that would be a great partnership between Rachel and I. You know,
okay.
So I'll go Rachel, graphic designer. I want it to be get out of my season. I think that she would be solid.
That's who you're gonna hire from your season. You gotta fire one person. So assume they all hire for all they all work for you for your business. You gotta fire one person. Who you fire?
On my season?
Yep.
Oh, this is gonna be awesome. I'm firing Camilla.
Oh.
Camilla talks so much trash.
Yep.
I'm firing Camilla. And she's going to sue me and take me for everything I own.
Okay,
but, you know, because she's a fighter. But I'm firing Camilla.
Okay.
Even though I think we'd be good business partners, too.
Okay, I like it. Make sure you have good business insurance in case she does. All right, so here's my question for you. These are some questions and things that we were wondering if you guys get behind the scenes, if production provides you, or what it looks like, okay? Tell me what you can and can't share. But the first one we were curious about is sunscreen.
I can't go into it, unfortunately. I'm sorry.
No way. Okay. All right. So none of those, like, can you share if you get toilet paper?
No, we definitely do not get toilet paper.
Okay.
I'll tell you that.
Okay.
We are in the ocean you know, it's called aqua dumps. You know, don't have to get into it too much. But like, here's
I didn't know that. It's called aqua dumps.
Oh yeah, man. It's like, it's one of the first things you learn. You think everybody thinks they're going to pick up leaves and stuff like that. And you have to, if you have to, but you know, not with getting into it too much.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times when you go to the bathroom, you're just going out in the ocean. You're just there and you got to figure it out.
Okay. I think this one's fair game to ask. And you can tell me no if it's not, but it seems like a fair game. What about like toothbrush, toothpaste?
No. Like, so this is the thing. It's like people think you get things, you just don't.
Yeah, well, I think that's part of it. Just assume you get some kind of kit or something.
No. I mean, like, I think that it's pretty well known that if people have something like medication or something that doesn't give them an advantage, but they can, you know, they can still compete if they take it and allows like somebody who otherwise wouldn't be able to. I think that's pretty well known.
Yeah.
But otherwise, like, I'm telling you the truth, you're just out there. Like, toothbrushes, we take little sticks, you twiddle them down, and then every morning you brush your teeth. And, like, the thing about that that's tough is like, I didn't even think it was going to be worth it to try and brush my teeth, but you really feel the gunk if you don't.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's brutal out there, man. I'm trying to, it's so funny how many people will come up to me and be like, so did they slip you some food behind the scenes or Nutri-Grain bar?
That's what we all think.
And I'm like, no way, man. This is really hard.
Or like insect repellent? There's none of that?
No. You rub different stuff on you. Like sometimes you like boil coconut oil, you know, coconut and stuff like that, and like use that for hair grease and stuff like that. But no.
Did you know any of that going into this or did you learn it? Like, did you prepare yourself by becoming a mini survivalist?
I did. I tried my best. Yeah. I'll tell you that. I mean, I was really fortunate that we had somebody on my tribe, David, who was really great at the survival stuff. But I tried my best to sort of educate myself on like what I could use out there, you know, what's specific to Fiji. And I'll tell you, like, the preparation was certainly helpful, but there's just nothing like being in it.
Interesting.
And the feeling you go from day one where it's so foreign to even day five, you're like still trying to figure it out. But today, fortunate enough, like they, you know, 15, 16, you start to really think that you're like a pro at it. And I'm sure we're not, but it felt that way. Like we really kind of learned how to survive out there.
That is totally crazy. Now, one of the questions that I think most people ask people if they're going on a date or they just meet them or they're doing an interview, it's a layup. Like, you go on an island and you got to pack five things. What are you packing? And that's a basic question. But I think for someone like you that has been through what you've been through in one survivor, I am very, very curious of your answer. You now go on a deserted island. It's just you. You got five things you could throw in that suitcase. What are the five things you're throwing in, especially knowing for 26 days you had next to nothing?
Okay. I'm going to go some sort of backpack to like carry a suitcase. Sorry. Yeah. I'm going to go some sort of backpack, something that I can like continue to carry things with.
Okay.
Go machete for sure. Go flint just to make fire easier.
Backpack, machete, flint.
I go MP3 player. No batteries. I'm thinking a little hypothetical here.
Real quick on that thought process, was it like music for mentality?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just to have something. If I'm there by myself, man, I mean, the people are what get you through it.
Yeah.
So if I don't have any noise, that's going to be pretty brutal.
Okay.
But I bring a tarp.
Okay.
I bring a tarp. And then, honestly, these are just survivor supplies. I bring a spearfish.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Backpack to carry around things, machete, flint, tarp, spearfish.
Okay, interesting. All right, I asked a lot of questions behind the scenes, but what is one thing behind the scenes we might not know? I'll give you an example. In the Bachelor franchise, we don't eat our food when we go on the dates. That's one. They give us dinner before. The food just sits there. I remember one for hometown dates. The only time you get to see and talk to your parents is when they're filming because they don't want any kind of chatter happening and influence without the camera seeing it. What's one thing maybe behind the scenes that people would find kind of interesting about Survivor?
Yeah, you know, you spend time on boats. When I watched the show, it goes from a challenge to, you know, or camp life, then to a challenge, and then to tribal council. And one thing that you always just kind of think it's all linear and like you're just walking from place to place, but there's many different islands. Yeah. You know, you're not on the same island as the other tribes at the beginning of the show. To get to challenges, they're on different islands, different places, things like that. And you're constantly going from place to place on boats and things like that. And like, you know, people get seasick, like it's the real deal. So I think that that's one thing behind the scenes that people don't realize. I mean, certainly not me. I definitely thought that like people were literally just walking everywhere, but yeah, you know, you spend a lot of time on the ocean on Survivor.
I love it. All right, well, let's conclude with this. We talk money on this podcast. You wake up, 26 days, you got $1 million in your bank account. There's a lot of people listening to this that feel as though if $1 million hit their bank account tomorrow, it would significantly change many, many aspects of their life. So being someone that had, like you said, you were grinding, you had some debt and your balance wasn't as high as you thought it would be. Now you got over $1 million in that bank account. How has your life changed? And what are some things that maybe you might tell your old self who didn't have that $1 million or someone listening today that's like, boy, oh boy, do I wish I just had $1 million hit my account like that.
Yeah. You know, in terms of how I've used the money, it's been awesome just to wipe away debt, to be able to know that, you know, I have support for the people around me who I care about. Also invest it just like to have a safety net for the first time in my life. In terms of rewinding and telling myself something or someone else, you know, my brother and I talk about this all the time just because of the way that we grew up. My brother's also a lawyer. He's my, you know, biggest role model. More so for him than me, but we've always felt like even though we're at this place in our life, that everything at any point could always just get, you know, pulled from right underneath you. And I think that we both sort of live with that mindset. And for the first time in my life, because of this million, I feel like it's not going to happen. You know, I mean, probably is not taking my advice, but it's not going to happen. And to have that sort of security for once, and also know if something happened to him or anyone else, you know, that we have this protection is huge. But all that to say though, if I could rewind and tell myself something, I'd say, dude, like just keep on doing what you're doing and don't worry about it as much. Like live life in the moment, which sounds so cliche, but it was even hard to do that, you know, and conceptualize that $1 million when it first hit. Still didn't feel real. And in a lot of ways, it still doesn't. But I'm so happy for it, man. Yeah. So happy.
Good for you. Do you think at all like there's a chance you might step away from being an attorney? Like you have some cushion, you're on season 48. They did announce, I know we can't speak to it, they announced you're on season 50. Is there any part of you that says, you know, my dream is to walk away from this attorney work? I want to do something else.
You know, I love being an attorney, man. That said, there's so many different things that I want to do. I'm a well-rounded guy. I think that was sort of showcased on the show. I didn't even necessarily realize it about myself until I was watching it back, but I'm just somebody who likes to do so many different things and try new things and meet new people. And if any opportunity arose that would allow me to sort of branch out and continue to sort of be this, you know, creative person or, you know, polymath or whatever the heck the term is, that would be so cool. You know, I want to teach again. I want to work with kids again. That was, as much as I love being a lawyer, I was so passionate about teaching. You know, I want to build something of my own. I really want to own something one day that I can look at and say, like, I did that. You know, maybe I employed a couple people, like I helped somebody, you know, further their life. I just have a ton of things that I want to do.
Yeah.
And so it's an awesome question. And I don't know exactly what the answer is. I want to write a book. I'm writing, you know, some fiction right now, you know, but I don't know the answer. But I think I'm going to be attorney for a while, but who knows? Who knows how it'll end up?
All right. Who knows? More to come. We'll see what happens. You know, I just have a couple more questions for you. Finance podcast, $1 million. You mentioned investing. You got any investment tips? You got anything that you think you're definitely going to invest in? Or are you working with a financial advisor to do that?
I'm working with a financial advisor. You know, you max out those retirement plans, traditional RIAs, Roth IRAs, you know, high index fund, the traditional stuff. I'm not going to, I think the good thing about having Maggie, my wife in the life, is that I'm the risk taker.
Yeah.
And I don't know how it would have been with $1 million. Maybe I'll put some money on the Bills. That'll be an investment.
Go Bills. We have a Bills fan here, everybody.
Yeah, Bills Ma.
Love that. Let's go.
But I'm going to keep it traditional right now, just so I could keep that safety net that I was just getting emotional about.
Okay. Keep that safety net. That's a beautiful insurance plan. No one can take it from you. The last question I got for you, Survivor, it's been done. Do you want to go on another reality show? And if so, what would it be?
Wow. You know, I always said that Survivor would probably be the only reality TV show that I would go on just because I love the game so much. Mm-hmm. That's truthful. That's truthful. Mm-hmm. It's Survivor, man. I'll be honest with you. Who knows? Maybe if I was single, I'd go on like Love Island or something. But I think I'm going to stick with Survivor for like now. That. Yeah, no, exactly.
Maybe like something like Big Brother, maybe Amazing Race.
I like those shows. They're all cool, but they're just not my speed. Mm. I think that Survivor is a show that was made for, like, or maybe I was made for Survivor. I'll put it that way. I really felt like that when I saw it, the moment I saw that first episode, I was like, that is for me. That is for me right there. So it sounds cliche. I'm sorry. But that is the show for me.
Unless Kyle is 26 days in survival mode, losing about 30 pounds and sleeping on average 3.5 hours, brushing his teeth with wooden chips that he finds on the floor, he's out. Survivor's his game and he's a survivor champion. Kyle, I appreciate you coming on Trading Secrets, but we got to wrap with the Trading Secrets. So it's a secret that is specific to your experience, what you've undergone, what you have continued to grow and develop to with all your different aspirations. It's Kyle Frazier's Trading Secrets. So what can you leave us with?
Yeah, man. I think that you just have to open yourself up to people wherever you are. I've lived in rural places, urban places, taught, you know, gone to jail. Mm-hmm. I've played on an island with 18 other people in an incredible game. I'm an attorney. You know, I've lived with people who don't have a dollar to their name and some people who have a lot more than that. And I think the only thing that's allowed me to be successful and also be who I am is just not judging and opening myself up to the people around me and just trying to learn. So, you know, that's my trading secret.
I love it. And I think my biggest trading secret learning from you is, yeah, every single stop that you've gone through in life, it feels like you've been able to acquire an ability to grow through those experiences, right? And then use those experiences and growth to help you today. And it feels like Survivor was set up for you because, like, when you talked about just always being hyper aware of your surroundings and seeing what's happening and how it's happening to put yourself in the best position to just win in life and also make impact around you, it's pretty cool. And to also see the way that, like, you talked about different areas and lifestyles that you grew up in, but also to see that you also pivoted so dramatically in a career, which is so hard to do. It's fascinating. So it's like you live a life of starts and stops and restarts, but through all of them, it's constant growth, which is really fascinating. So thank you for coming on Trading Secrets. It was really cool to learn from you. Congratulations on $1 million. How about that? To wake up after 26 days and just have $1 million in your bank account, it's pretty damn cool. Kyle, where can everyone find everything you have going on?
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate you having me on here.
Yeah.
Give me a little bit more credit, but thank you. You can find me on Instagram at Kyle Frazier, KyleFrazer. There's no E in it, unfortunately. Couldn't get that tag. And then on TikTok, Kai Frazier.
All right. Kyle Frazier, TikTok and Instagram. Go give him a follow and make sure you check out that video of him surprising his wife. It is unmatched, unbelievable. Kyle, thank you for being on this episode of Trading Secrets.
Thank you, man. Great being with you, Jason. Thank you.
We are closing the bell with the one and only, the curious Canadian, who in rare form joined me in the intro. I kind of enjoyed that. David, what did you think about this episode after listening to it? Always curious about your thoughts.
I mean, here's my take on Kyle listening to it. I didn't watch the season of Survivor, to be honest. I haven't watched a season of Survivor in a long time. That's why when I keep hearing about it and seeing about it, like I said in the intro, I just can't believe how long it's been and the success that it has. And you know, we've talked about ratings and especially honed in on the Bachelor franchise, how they're always trying to change things to stay relevant and keep up with views. If Survivor wasn't performing, it's fair to say, Jay, it wouldn't be on our TVs. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So that itself was wild. And I got to say, Kyle is someone that after listening to the episode all the way through, I don't think he's someone that I would ever doubt what's coming out of his mouth. He sounds so sure about what he's talking about. He sounds so aware of his surroundings. He's got a great self-assessment. He's got great, a great viewpoint on life and how his upbringing affects his current life and his strengths and his weaknesses. He's a very convincing guy. Maybe that is the lawyer in him, but I also think it's just a good human being who's just giving it to you how it is in a really kind of soft and meticulous way. I really enjoyed just listening to him. So I thought that he was a great, great guest.
I think we see at a lot of these contest shows, Survivor, Traitors, all of them, the importance of communication is like everything, right? And so I agree with everything he said. Like when he was talking, I was locked in. I was believing what he was saying. I was very interested. I wanted the conversation to keep flowing. And I think in life, like it's weird how some of those skill sets actually translate. Like some skill sets that you need in Survivor, like, you know, just mentally being able to push through, overcoming adversity, thinking strategically, communicating effectively, being able to sell people on like your beliefs and what you think is true. Like it's interesting how like Survivor does dictate a lot of these skill sets that are required to succeed in life and professional world and even like discipline with the financial world.
I think Survivor's got to be, I think it's way harder than people think. Like let's get right into it. I mean, he said, it's like, no, you're just there and you're there. And it's like, you got to fend for yourself. No deodorant, no toothbrush, no toothpaste, no toilet paper, which to me, like, that is the one thing I'm like, okay, well, they got to be able to do that. Like, he even said, here's my curious mind. He goes, I got a spear and I got a fish. Okay. Who's filleting that thing?
Yeah, you got to fillet it.
Okay, you caught a fish. Great. Are you just chomping into it like it's sushi? Like that's my thing. It's like, I could probably go on that beach and catch something, but once I catch it, like, I'm screwed. Like, I don't know. Like, that's, to me, it's like, it just blows my mind. Survivor. It's real. It's as real as it gets for TV shows that sometimes don't appear real. Like you were saying, the behind the scenes of The Bachelor.
That is probably my biggest take. The two things from this episode that, I mean, there's a lot of takeaways, especially like life lessons, stuff like that. But the two things about the show, The Trading Secrets, that surprised me the most is the speed at which they get paid. Like, that's crazy to me. That, like, boom, they get paid like that. The other thing was, like you said, this show, there is no fluff, like no toothpaste, no toilet paper. You're, you know, however many days it's, you know, he lost what, almost 30 pounds. Like, you have to go through the starvation. There's not much production. Like, those are the two things that kind of blew me away.
All right. So, and I know Survivor used to be 40 days. Now they got it down to 26. So that's probably a strategic business play more than anything. Here's a question to you. What do you think would be the hardest part about being on Survivor for you, for Jason Tardik, knowing what you know from Kyle?
It's a great question, David. The two things, I can operate off little sleep because I kind of already do. But after a while, that deprivation would really mess with me. I think that would, like, really, really break me down. And then I think the second one would be the the, like, the hunting part of it. I've never hunted anything ever in my life, and I really don't intend on doing that. It's not my thing. So, like, the idea of the food thing, like, I can deal with, like, the mental anguish of not eating. I'd lose a lot of weight. I can game out. But, like, if I was on an island by myself and I had to find a way to, like, hunt and kill something and then eat it, I'd be fucked. But so I would try and use, like, my game strategy. Oh, I got a good question for you because I want to know what your strategy would be after this. So that question's coming. But I could use different, like, game tactics to be able to be like, hey, this is my strength. This is yours. You go do that. And I think that way I would eat. But that would be my biggest one. What would yours be? And then I got a question for you.
Yeah, no, I think, like, I actually think the food thing would be okay for me. Like, I've been fasting for almost 10 years and I'm on, like, a one meal a day, like, plan. So, like, I think I could adjust to that really well. I think it would be, like, I would be so incredibly useless as, like, a man on that island. Like, I can't build shit. I'm not a hunter-gatherer. Like, what am I good for? And I just think that I honestly think the biggest, like, it would be, like, the ego blow of, like, now I'm there. So getting there is, like you said, what was great about the interview is you talk about the audition and having to put on a show and you kind of build yourself up and then you get there. And he said he got humbled in his first day, like, I'd find a really hard time probably maybe finding my way amongst the whole thing. Because I, like you, I think I can listen really well. I'm a really good people person. That would be my strength. But it's like, hey, now how else do I provide? And then I think the challenges would be fun though.
Yeah, but I'd be off. Like, you're downplaying this part. For anyone that doesn't know, David is a very strong man. So you would be able to, like, move bricks and lumber. Like, you'd be able to contribute that way. Let me ask you this question. Now we're going from Survivor to a crazy life scenario. This will never happen, knock on wood. Imagine you get sentenced to some form of prison sentence, okay? Mm-hmm. Let's just say it's 6 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years, okay? Mm-hmm. Won't happen, knock on wood. But let's just say it does. If it does, and you're in the state prison.
Yeah.
What is your survival tactic? What are you doing to survive?
No. Oh man.
We went around the fire pit the other day and we all answered this question. I'll go first.
Yeah.
I would do one of three things, I think. One thing I would definitely do is, for, like, a value add system, I would teach finance. I'd be like, everyone here, I will help you. I'll help you with the taxes, your finances. I will help you with every form of money. Any money questions you have, like, I'll be your professor. Like, give me some professor angle.
Okay. I like that.
Yeah. The second angle would be massive trade. So I would use
cash I have outside, I would find a way to get it in, and then I would buy all the different goods that I could in there to like be like, okay, for protection, I'm gonna give you two packs of cigarettes. For this, I got the ramen noodles. Like it'd be a trade of protection. And then the last one would be if I got stuck, like I know odds and gambling and all that stuff well. So I would like run a gambling ring. I'd help like run some kind of like, I'd be like the blackjack dealer, the poker dealer, the sports bettor. And I'd like help run that. Those would be my three ways of like, cause I'm not fighting. Like I'm I got to find protection in other ways.
Well, I'm not showering ever. I'm just going to forego the shower. So I'm just going to stay out of that scene. And then I'm not fighting. So I was going to, like initially I was like, I'm going to be the fitness guy. Like I'm going to write everyone a fitness plan. And I'm going to find out every macronutrient of every food that we get from the kitchen staff. And I'm going to like help guys do what they want. You want to bulk up? I'm going to try and sweet talk the kitchen staff. So, hey, my boy here needs double protein. I know we get some slop here. And then this guy, and he's got to fast. He's got to skip this. I'll get the black coffee going.
Maybe even giving your protein up because you can fast.
Exactly. Yeah. And then me and you will team together and we'll be getting some more protein in here. Some more like, you know, we'll get that going. So I'd be that guy. I'd also probably be like game night guy. Like trivia, like I'm providing fun here. Like I'm like, all right, we're doing like today we're doing NFL 1990s trivia, and we're just like
Bobby Barker.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Bob Price Barker.
Is the right guy.
Bob Barker.
Parker.
Yeah. So I'm probably
the host of the trivia night.
I gotta add some entertainment value for sure. So I think I'm going to that realm. Like, get my coaching background. Do a little like health and wellness, then let's add some fun to this, because everything else on the physical side, I know you just said I can move bricks and shit, but I'm not I don't have refs to get in my fight. I don't have protective gear. Like I'm not doing that. So
you know what would be like, there's someone I know that has been to state prison in a state that is not a state prison you want to go to, and he was telling me about like how when fights happen and if someone like challenges you, he's like, I know at times I would have got the shit kicked out of me, but the biggest thing is like, you have to step up. Like you have be willing, because otherwise it's like a game of boundaries. Like if your boundaries get pushed, then you have to, then they adjust, and then you're conditioning people to stay at the boundary level and they keep pushing it. So he's like, there are times I knew either I had to show up to a fight and know there would be no fight. It was just that I showed up. Or that I have to fight and kind of get the shit kicked out of me just so they know the next time I'll also show up, which is a crazy concept. It makes me think, we're talking Survivor, maybe there's some angle in the prison system. I'm a big true crime guy that we could have an angle of podcast, like, you know, Trading Secrets. Like there's something there.
The sport of hockey is actually pretty similar to what you're saying. Like there's a code in hockey. If you hit from someone from behind, like you're going to get jumped and like you can't not fight. Like you got to kind of pay for your action or step up to the plate. And then if you become a reputation of someone who's just going to turtle and cower, like that stays with you. So yeah, there is no bigger, social experiment than I think a prison yard. And Survivor is so interesting because like you said, whatever your strengths are, no one has all the strengths, right? Like even Kyle admitted, like he doesn't have all the strengths, but I absolutely loved his like people first approach, his listening approach. I just thought that was fascinating. Like you said, the speed at which he gets paid, incredible, just realization there. And I heard you talking after about some of the other shows. So can you, for when you guys stopped hitting record, can you refresh the people's memories at home, like Squid Games, for example? Squid Games, you don't get paid right away. I think it was a year and a half after. So some of these other shows, it's interesting how they kind of delay the payment. And Survivor, just like that, you do the finale and then you show up and you have $1 million in your bank. Like that's wild.
Yeah, we've talked about a lot of shows where you're the lead, the reality shows, like you'll get paid the day you sign, like a quarter of it, you know, the first episode, the last episode, a period after the last episode. So it could be like a full year or two. We know it's like an ongoing joke with Gabby Winby. I think we talked about like how she never got, or she did get paid on Traders. It just took a while. By the time she was like doing press, she's like, can I get, there are people like, what's it feel like to win this much? She's like, I don't know. Like you tell me. I think, yeah, there's a bunch of them out there, but I think I don't know if I know one show that pays immediately like that. And I'll even like give you, let's go a step further. And the talent management agency we run, a lot of deals that we are doing, payment terms can sometimes be like 90 days. So I might execute a deal tomorrow with, let's call it Listerine. And there could be a chance that I don't get paid 90 days until invoice. Now, of course, our job is to try and negotiate that to be less, but there are some agencies and brands out there who won't do less than 60. So to get paid like this amount, like $1 million, like almost instantly, that's unheard of. When I was thinking Squid Games, I was thinking of the actual show.
Yeah.
Like
when
he gets out and he goes into his bank account and there's like billions of yen. Like that was crazy.
And what's crazy too about the $1 million cash prize is it's been the same since season one. I mean, season one was $1 million.
Yeah. Survivor, like inflation, get with it.
Get with it, Survivor. So that was really interesting. I'll have the question here. What would you do if you had $1 million in your bank account tomorrow? I think it's something that we've probably asked on the show before. Is there something that you would do if you had $1 million in your bank account tomorrow?
I think what I would recommend, I don't know, man, it's so boring. Like,
oh, yeah.
I would say if you got $1 million, I use that as like a financial plan, like a financial safety net. If you can make 5 to 10% off that, you got 50 to 100K of income a year.
It's boring. But when you really look at it, and everyone really let that sink in, I mean, when we really think about it, he said $359,000 had to go to taxes. So you're really looking at just under $650 here. You could do a lot with that. That'd make it last a lot longer than going, you know, buy a house. And then it's like, okay, well, how are you going to afford the house? How are you going to afford the utilities in the house? Now you got a mortgage that you can't afford. Interesting. Okay.
And there's a lot of different tax strategies, which we could talk about on maybe another episode, getting closer to tax season. But like you can if you have $1 million, you can take like a certain amount, say 100K, put it into a trust that could be used for non-for-profit only.
Yeah.
You could start your own foundation. Now you're only taxed at 900,000. If you own an LLC, section 179, you can buy a car over 6,000 pounds and depreciate up to 70% of it. Like there's all these different tactics.
Listen, listen to your prison game. It's already just kind of, you're already kind of wheel and deal in the prison game, right?
Dude, Shawshank Redemption 2.0 right here. All right, David, anything before we wrap? This is a really cool episode of Survivor. I loved where it went. You guys go ask your friends at home, if you were in prison, how would you survive? And you tell us in the reviews, give us 5 stars. Let us know in the reviews, how would you survive? And whoever gives the best answer, I got a little giveaway for you. But David, anything before we wrap?
No, just I really, like I go back to our guest, I really, really appreciated Kyle's view. I even appreciate his trading secret. Open yourself up to people wherever you are. I just think in today's day and age, in today's society, in today's climate, we turn on the news, you just don't see that. I really, really appreciated that. I really appreciated how he was able to connect his upbringing to how he kind of, the difficulties and also the successes that he's had in enacting that experiences into his current life. Really, really just a really good, humble guy. Seems like a very worthy winner of Survivor. So, good to get Survivor on the podcast too. Always good to represent.
Survivor's on the podcast. Another Bills fan is on the podcast. A lot of action happening in the market out there. One I'll talk about on the Instagrams and socials and stuff, but in general, it's a wild world we're living in that we are seeing interest rates get cut while markets are at all-time highs. We know right now, typically, what happens is when markets are struggling and the economy struggling a little bit, then you'll see market cuts. But this is all proactive planning, or so they're saying from the administration. So we'll see what happens. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts right now. I was out with a realtor this past weekend. I said, what's your take on what the future is? She said, this is the first time in my career I can truly say, I don't know. That's because there's so many different moving indicators. But one thing that's great is markets are at all-time highs. So don't be sitting on cash because your cash is losing money by the second. Make sure it's invested. But enough of the finance talk. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Trading Secrets, one you couldn't afford to miss.
You've finally broken loose from work. 3 friends, 1 tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.